Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Steve Dace and Dr. Pierre Corey. We break through the latest unbelievable bombshell study out of Germany regarding the vaccine. As always, you can email me your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Take out your podcast app and type in Charlie Kirk Show and subscribe in the upper right-hand corner. We'll see many of you in Tampa, tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. There's so much I want to get to and no time to spare at all. And with us is a voice of truth, a shining light, someone who I just really enjoy spending time with, honestly, who I believe has saved thousands, if not tens of thousands, and possibly hundreds of thousands of lives. Something that we all wish to aspire to is Dr. Pierre Corey. Dr. Corey, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Charlie. Good to be back.
So, Dr. Corey, I want to start. You've been speaking out specifically about young people that have been dropping dead suspiciously. One study in England shows a death rate 3.2 times higher versus unvaccinated and vaccinated. You've quoted Ed Dowd before, who has suggested this is a democide taking place of the government potentially murdering its own citizens. That's a very charged accusation. What the heck is going on with all these young people dropping dead?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to overstate the magnitude of that statement, right, that Ed Dowd coined. Listen, we're speaking to the data. The data is unmistakable. You know, the life insurance industry has been showing data now for a while that working aged Americans, 18 to 64 years old, the CDC has this data, that starting in 2021, right around the end of the first quarter, they're all-cause mortality started to rise to unprecedented, historically unprecedented levels. And that's just one source of data. That's a pretty good source of data. That's the industry. You can find it in their quarterly reports. You can find it out of the mouths of their CEOs who are trying to call attention. Now, there is obviously people are pretending that they don't know what that is, but it's pretty clear that it's not deaths of despair. Those are not the causes, and we're attributing it to the vaccines. And life insurance industry is only one thing. Disability figures are showing the same, which is historic unprecedented rises around the same time. Mm-hmm. And then you have this proliferation of reports, like you talked about, Charlie, of young people, no comorbidities, suddenly arresting, being found dead in their beds. And I mean, that's just anecdotal reports, but the numbers of them are absolutely terrifying. And you know, a lot of us have been following the data on the toxicity of these vaccines. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing, which is trying to put forth that data to guide the American public in how to preserve and protect their health and their lives, really.
Yeah, and this is one of the most incredible medical stories in modern history that's getting zero coverage. And we're supposed to believe that it's sad, sudden adult death syndrome and people that are just dropping dead. And maybe that's just part of it. But I mean, for example, you recently wrote that hospitals are adding crash carts on almost every floor. What is a crash cart?
Yeah. So that's one particular major hospital in the Midwest, which I have a colleague who works there. But a crash cart is where we keep all the equipment and medicines in order to resuscitate someone from cardiac arrest. And so that's a true medical emergency. Those kind of emergencies happen, I wouldn't say routinely, but they happen inside hospitals on medical wards and in ICUs. And when someone is found to be pulseless or in cardiac arrest, you know, a whole response is triggered and the crash cart is central to that. And the thing about the crash carts, Charlie, is that once you resuscitate someone from a cardiac arrest, those crash carts are in disarray. The medicines have all been disturbed. Many of them have been used. Equipment has been used and disrupted. And they need to be restocked immediately if in case someone were, else were to arrest in that same location of the hospital. Apparently, the cardiac arrests, especially the unexpected, and in particular in young people in the hospital, are happening at such a frequency that one major hospital is now putting more crash carts available on the floors. I mean, that's just one little data point to that, that just, again, illuminates what is a humanitarian catastrophe.
So is all-cause mortality going up in America? Is that correct?
I know the data for 18 to 64-year-olds. I think in older groups, it gets a little jumbled. I don't know the exact data for the older age groups, but I know that's a little bit confounded because of the very high excess mortality we had earlier in the pandemic. Many of the, our older population died earlier. So that 2021 data is not as impressive as that sudden rise in the working age Americans, which it, with these milder variants, Charlie, you can't blame it on COVID. Right. The variants are milder. These are generally younger people with much less comorbidities. And yet you're seeing this historic rise. And for those who try to dismiss it as gunshots or overdoses or suicides, you know, why would they suddenly occur at the end of quarter one in 2021? Those are epidemics that we've been dealing with now for a long time. But the timing of the rise is absolutely stunning.
So, doctor, is there any other potential explanation? I always try to check my premise and not try to get too into my own narrative. Is there any other explanation for this?
When I review all the data, and you're absolutely right, your intuition is correct. We don't want to leap to dramatic conclusions, sensationalize things, but I've looked at a lot more data points. Charlie, we could do this for an hour. I will tell you, one of the most troubling was a researcher did an analysis of the Massachusetts death certificates, and he compared 2020 and 2021. And there, that was a really telling finding. What happened is in 2020, all the excess mortality in the population was from largely driven by respiratory disease. People were dying of respiratory failure, which is what this respiratory virus does. In 2021, it changed to largely under the category of cardiovascular, meaning heart attacks, strokes, sudden arrests, aneurysms, pulmonary emboli. So you now in the middle of a pandemic, from 1 year to the next, we have the population excess mortality largely from respiratory causes now changing to cardiovascular causes. I mean, there's only one way that we can explain that. I mean, something was introduced into the population that was injected. I mean, that's a crude way of stating that, but I find that a pretty damning piece of data to suggest that something happened. Again, the timing of that shift of the excess mortality is, I can't find other explanations. And the last thing, Charlie, is, we're forgetting that the long-held regulatory standard is that when you introduced an experimental or novel medical intervention, The generally accepted standard historically is when you start to see concerning data or disturbing reports of death or adverse events, you're supposed to assume it's related to that new intervention until proven otherwise. Mm-hmm. And what I see is as a society and all the agencies, they've upended that. And instead, they assume and dismiss at it being unrelated until proving it's causative. And that's not very safe. And that's not how we should do it. We have to assume that that is the primary cause. We do not have any other good explanations to dismiss that away with.
At some point, there's going to be a smoking gun here. And the life insurance industry is part of this, but it's not limited to that, to your point. And so, look, the last two FDA meetings, they've approved these phase three experimental gene therapies for babies and toddlers. They call it a vaccine, 6 months to four-year-olds, as well as voted to skip future clinical trials for these vaccines as modified going forward. Only one doctor on the entire committee who voted no and said the fix was in. Why are they so fascinated about vaccinating six-month-year-olds?
I very briefly, Charlie, and I think you and I have talked about this before. That is one of the most crudest and obscene examples of total regulatory capture. There is no public health benefit to those children. They will not be saved. They were far more likely to be harmed. There's no data to support that recommendation. The fact that it was unanimous shows you how our regulatory agencies work. Those are committees that are completely stocked with yes men and women. That's why they're there. They're there to serve and further the interests of the pharmaceutical industry. That's the only way you can explain that obscenity of an approval.
It's well said. Are you a business owner who actually cares about your employees and will fight through this economic crisis for your team? I support you, and I want you to fight for your employees now and for their future. That is why I want you to move your company's 401k plan to a company I trust, Pax Financial Group. Pax Financial Group is not a mega corporation that runs your 401k one day and the next day supports legislation that destroys your values. And your small business retirement plan needs to be run by a company who shares your values. Right now, I want you to text 401k to the number 74868 to get a no-cost conversation with a Pax Retirement Specialist. Again, I trust the team at Pax Financial Group. Check it out. Text 401k to 74868. Dr. Corey, this is something I've asked you every time you've come on the program, especially our longer form interviews. But I'm going to find a new way to ask about the same essence of the question with a little bit of a change, which is I'm losing my faith in institutional science in America. And I saw a quote that made me think of something we've discussed, which is one of the reasons why I don't trust the science is because the science always follows the money. You don't follow the science because the science follows the money. You mentioned that idea of regulatory capture. I can read quote after quote, where whether it be Dr. Fauci, who says that the vaccines do not protect against infection overly well, we have evidence to show the FOIA request suggests the CDC has not even been monitoring VAERS data, as Cheryl Atkinson has reported. I've always held up this idea of science and this pursuit of empirical truth as a beacon of the West. Is that been put in permanent jeopardy because of corporate capture of our institutions?
I think at the institutional level, science has been captured and corrupted for sure. However, I work out amongst the population. I don't have a conflicts of interest. I know many colleagues that don't. A lot of us are just seekers of the truth, and we want to figure out how to help our patients the best. However, we're not the ones who get hired into this maelstrom of pharmaceutical influenced and captured institutions. If you work there, it's very hard to practice good science and advocate for it. You're not going to get promoted. You're not going to get hired by the pharmaceutical industry when you're looking to leave civil service. And so you have that revolving door, and I think you do not have good policies. In fact, Charlie, I'm sure you're aware of this, but there was a landmark article, in my opinion, that came out this week, which is showing that scientists and researchers are leaving those institutions right now in droves. They've had it. They've said they're sick of a working institution that is essentially committing and practicing bad science and that is under heavily political influence. I personally am a little bit more cynical. I think they're leaving because they see the crash coming and they want to protect their careers and their reputations. And so they want to distance themselves from the pseudoscience, which has not been science, that is in practice. I agree with you. Our scientific institutions and agencies have long been corrupted. I was not aware of that going to in the pandemic. That has been a lesson of my lifetime. And I'm going to continue to fight against that and advocate for institutions that work for us instead of being victims of theirs.
When we have Dr. Birx, who now comes out and says that the entire strategy was built on hope, that they were hoping that it was working. And yet they smeared you, Dr. Corey, and Dr. McCullough and Dr. Malone. They called ivermectin horse paste. And we've never received, what really bothers me, and we haven't talked in months, we've never received an apology from any of these people for the deaths, for the lives that have been altered. I mean, it's not just that they've been wrong. They have refused to admit any failure along the way, and anything short of idolatry-style worship is not acceptable of these people.
Yeah. This new rule where anyone who deviated from scientific consensus is another one of the great historical kind of crimes, right? So the idea that you could have a scientific consensus in a novel disease in which we were learning things about it every single day, and suddenly some position of the agency became, you know, emblazoned in stone, you know, that was, you know, unassailable. And anyone who spoke differently with different data, different insights was immediately not only dismissed, attacked, but censored really from anywhere in a public forum. And when you look, Charlie, at the agencies themselves, their own positions and policies have done nothing but shift rapidly. Everything that they said 2 years ago very quickly became something different. And so if I were to follow scientific consensus at every single time point, my head would spin around, right? I mean, I find the censorship and the propaganda and this top-down authoritarianism is anti-science.
It totally
they should be
is.
Learning from us, not we learn from them.
And it's just there's so many people that are still propagandized to it. And for example, the more you inject, the more you infect. And if you say that on certain social media sites, you're immediately banned still to this time. Fortunately, we're out of time, Dr. Corey. How do people follow you and support you?
So my organization is at flccc.net, and I also write on a Substack, pierrecorey.substack.com, and I write about all that I'm learning and all that I'm seeing in this pandemic.
Well, that's the key part. You're learning that you don't come with some sort of pre-existing, you know, dogma or conclusion. Where does it lead me? I don't know. That's kind of what scientists used to do. And yep. it's a deeper conversation for another time, Dr. Corey, how we at the pinnacle of modernity have decided to go back to scholastic dark ages of unquestioned dogma and almost religious zeal of the suppression of inquiry. It's a very interesting, more deeper philosophical question, because you'd think that as we hit the zenith of modernity with Twitter and, you know, self-driving cars, we'd be more open. No, it's actually more totalitarian than ever. It's a fascinating topic. Thank you, Dr. Corey. Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Charlie.
Look, as you know, our friend Mike Lindell has amazing passion, and especially has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll save $90 on a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop this. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoors, out all day long, made with My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, made with quality leather suede. Call 800-875-0425 or click on promo code Kirk or MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. This offer will not last long, so order now with promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk at MyPillow.com. With us right now is Steve Dace. He wrote Faucian Bargain. Steve, welcome back to the program. I had somebody come up to me a couple days ago. They said, Charlie, I found this amazing podcaster from Iowa. I was like, oh, yeah. Steve Dace. They said, yeah, exactly. It was great. And so, Steve, you're growing, and it's great to see. Welcome back to the program. There's a study out of Germany you want to share with us?
Yeah, it's actually an alert from the German health department. And boy, you think it's bad here. Imagine you're a German citizen. In the last 2 weeks, they told you we're not going to be able to help you heat your home this winter. And oh, by the way, that jab we mandated you all take, one out of every 5,000, we're estimating, creates what the German health department said, quote, is a serious adverse effect, end quote.
Which company vaccine was it?
They did not specify which one it was. It could be a combination therein. Obviously, AstraZeneca would be more prevalent in Europe than it's not here. But just to show you that those numbers are estimated low, in our own vaccine adverse effect reporting system, otherwise known as VAERS, there's more than that in just sheer hospitalizations that are reported on there. And if you know anything about VAERS, you've got to go through numerous pages of citations and stuff to report an adverse event, which leads to things being underreported there because it's not something that you can easily document in the system. It kind of weeds out people who aren't serious about reporting an adverse effect. But even if we just took their numbers, Charlie, as gospel, they're not. They're estimated low. But even if we just took those, about a month ago, I met a member of your team in Billings, Montana at the Reagan dinner there. We both spoke there. And that's about the population of Billings, Montana. So imagine you got up one day. This is pre-COVID, pre-jab. If it would be the biggest story in the country, Charlie, if you got up one day and we learned everybody in Billings, Montana is in the hospital, either with myocarditis, pericarditis, carditis.
Yep. And it's so dishonest.
It would be the number one story in America if this happened, right? And yet a lot of people, including, frankly, a lot of people in our own side of the industry. I understand why corporate media that's completely sold out to big pharma doesn't sell anything, but a lot of our peers act like it doesn't happen. A lot of our, you know, a lot of our Republicans don't say a word about it. It is truly bizarre that this plague is happening right now. And in very few places do they want to acknowledge it.
So that's 1 in 5,000. So if you extrapolate that to about what?
That's just doses. That's doses. We've had 600 million doses, not people, doses, 600 million doses of that administered here in the United States, which gets you to about 120,000 adverse effects. But again, if you go to VAERS right now, there's more hospitalizations reported than even that number.
Yes.
All right. So the number is much higher than that.
And I mean, so Steve, I don't understand this. I'm still getting Republicans and conservatives. I mean, like your governor in Iowa, she's a big vax supporter. What are they? Are they all bought by Pfizer and AstraZeneca? I do not understand this at all. We have Ron DeSantis and Rand Paul.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
So, I mean, I just had dinner with our governor on Saturday with Tucker Carlson, not to name drop, but he was here in town. And she's been great. I mean, she has been, if DeSantis is in a tier by himself, she would be in whatever the next tier is. Of not just good compared to other Republicans, because that's a low bar, but like legitimately good. But there is clearly a major blind spot on this issue. And I think maybe I understand it because, you know, my assistant, Todd, who I co-wrote Fauci and Bargain with, he is a committed granola crunching righty anti-vaxxer. And I always thought it was weird and I always thought it was quirky. And, you know, I didn't really care, you know, when cold and flu season went around every year and him and his kids weren't vaccinated and me and my kids were because, you know, 10 years ago, I went and did a mission trip in Haiti and the Obama State Department told me I had to have all my classic boosters and everything updated in order to come back because it's the poorest country in our hemisphere. And so the reason I wasn't worried about it is because I was vaccinated. So if I went to Haiti and got something, I was inoculated. I wouldn't bring it back with me. And so if Todd was not inoculated and I was, I'm like, well, I don't really have a problem with where he's at. I'm good. I'm inoculated. But this is the first time ever now that we have been told that the failure of a product is to be blamed on the people who did not purchase or use it. OK, and so the idea that everyone must have this in order for it to work goes against the actual science. And when you look at what's transpired here, they've changed the definition of vaccine. They did this last year. It no longer is something that stops you from getting an infection. There's a study out right now from the European Medical Society that is openly saying that repeated injections and boosters can harm the immune system. After 8 months, they found that people who were unvaccinated had stronger immune systems than people who were vaccinated. Yep. This is in The Lancet. All right. And this is not, you know, on The Blaze where I work, or this isn't the Charlie Kirk Show. This isn't the friggin' Lancet. They're reporting this. And I think that a lot of our people, and I would count myself among them, you know, because I have now had to ask myself this question, Charlie, if they did it with this one, am I really supposed to believe they've never done it before ever? They just did it for the first time with this one. And I think that's where good people like Kim Reynolds and a lot of the people that you are in, you know, indirectly referring to, we are uncomfortable with where this conversation goes if we acknowledge that this is happening right now. And so there's this sort of cognitive dissonance that is happening.
Yeah, I mean, she's a nice person, but I mean, I just reminded myself of it because I was like, I think I'm losing my mind. I mean, she got the COVID booster shot. She did all these videos telling people to get vaccinated. And so potentially Iowans died because of that, right? Based on what you're saying. And I'm not blaming her. I don't understand why Republicans are afraid to talk about this issue. I mean,
well, I think we go to the former president. I mean, he was in Alaska last week and at his rally, and in the middle of it, out of nowhere, says, well, they don't want me to mention this because he knows he'll get booed because the previous times he's brought up the vaccine, he's gotten booed. I mean, it takes a lot given the resume he can present to those people for him to present something that would get him booed. And this is it. And then for him to then claim, though, afterwards, but I saved all these lives and I'm really proud of it, even though I can't mention it. I think that we're going to have to create a situation here where we're going to have to force a lot of eyes open. Now, the good news is this time next year, the couple of names we've mentioned, Ron DeSantis, Donald Trump, are probably going to be right here in my backyard trying to win people like me over, running for president. And we're going to have a captive audience. And I can promise you within the grassroots here in Iowa, And where our audiences that we talk to across the country, there is a huge appetite to wake these Republicans up on what is going on.
I've said this to the president before. I'm a big supporter of his, obviously. I said it's his second biggest vulnerability going to 24 is the support of the vaccine. Number one is personnel selection. And then number two is the vaccine thing. It's just, it's not just deeply unpopular. It is a majorly personal issue where people feel as if this vaccine isn't just like a bad thing, that it's been poisonous to people. I mean, the German government comes out and they say, again, I want to repeat this, one reported severe reaction per 5,000 vaccine injections, not per 5,000 people. That's the German Ministry of Health. And we've always been told by lefties here, the German healthcare system is the best in the world, right? They got their act together, right? That we can't dare question that. So, Steve, I want to ask you just more broadly, the Republican Party now just voted, 47 of them voted to make gay marriage permanent. There is, and Tucker talked about this, by the way, with Bob Vanderplatz, the family leader. There is this growing just chasm between the people and our politicians. Do you feel that starting to tighten a little bit on the Republican side? Why is it that our leaders continually betray us?
I think it's a very simple yet difficult conclusion. And I for a long time, Charlie, I really thought it was only on the left where magical thinking of accepting realities on the basis of whether it's convenient for me to acknowledge it and not on the basis of whether it's objectively true was largely relegated to them. And maybe for a long time in this country it was, but when tumors are left untreated, they metastasize. And now a lot of this has seeped into our own barracks here on the other side as well. And I think that a lot of people just don't want to accept. And, you know, we come up with a lot of excuses. It's the evil party versus the stupid party. It really just comes down to they just don't agree with you. And I just think that we don't want to accept that. And because the work it will take to confront that, just similar to the conversation we just had.
Yes.
The work it will take to confront that is extraordinary. And it's much easier to look at the cultural hole we're in and just assume that Donald Trump, with the force of his will and personality, and Ron DeSantis, with the force of his resume, will just give them the keys to the kingdom, and they will be a modern-day King Josiah, to make a biblical reference, and they'll go the extra mile. They'll go to the high places and tear down the Asherah poles and deliver us. That's not really what government by the consent of the governed means. We are not a monarchy. They are our servants. And I think what's extraordinary is in several areas, both of them actually pushed their base further than their base actually was at that particular time and were successful because of it. But that is not a long-term recipe to political success. The long-term recipe to political success is you are actually more radicalized than your leaders and you forced them there.
That's one
of the things that amazed me when I was really trying to first start to build a name for myself when we went national is I agreed to do over 50 appearances on MSNBC as a token conservative. And we debated every topic, gay marriage, like all the divisive ones. We debated them all. Let me tell you one topic we never debated, Charlie. We never did one roundtable at MSNBC about whether the true lefty was going to win the Democratic primary or whether the Dino would. Just was never a topic of conversation. Didn't come up privately. They didn't sweat out. Primaries were basically your personal preference, who I have a relationship with, who am I close to, because they knew whether they got Mary Landrieu elected in Louisiana or Dianne Feinstein in California, they were getting the same agenda. It didn't matter. That's why they're losing their minds over Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema now, because they're not used to seeing somebody in their own ranks defy their own base, right? On our side, we're shocked when the people we elect align with the base. And that's why I often say that the biggest difference between the two parties is that Democrats inspire their base to get what they want and Republicans conspire against their base to get what they want.
That's well said. That's exactly right. And you're right. We have to change it through primaries and through pressure campaigns. I mean, I'm not going to go too far. I mean, we could talk about Iowa all day long. And you might not agree with this, I don't know, but why sending $56 billion to Ukraine is like a top concern of one of your senators?
I'm with you wholeheartedly on this.
It's unbelievable to me.
And here's what we've done. We've destroyed our economies. The EU economy is destroyed. If this is hurting Vladimir Putin, I would really hate to see what enabling him looks like.
Yeah, exactly. It's been a stimulus check, actually, to the Kremlin. Go yes, get him, Joni Ernst. Yeah.
Yes.
You go declare another war, the GDP size of North Dakota. So, Steve, I do agree. I think the grassroots is fired up, but a lot of people then ask the question, what can I do? I think it's one of the tactics of tyrants to make us feel helpless when in reality we're not. What are your thoughts?
I think we have to get very informed before we start quizzing these candidates. For example, let's go back to the jab for a minute, if you don't mind. Moderna was previously 0-for-9 bringing products to market with mRNA technology in the history of the company. 0-for-9. Only one of those products, Charlie, even got as far as human trials. The previous 8 failed before they even got to that point. And yet we are expected to believe that out of nowhere, suddenly they stuck the landing on this technology, and they did so with a novel coronavirus in less than a year, when they spent over 10 years trying to come up with a vaccine to the original SARS and were unable to do so. This is something that I think when you frame questions to those candidates, when they come to your early states, like where That's I live exactly in Iowa, right. or South Carolina, or New Hampshire, right? Or those Super Tuesday states, frame the question that way. Explain to me how it is possible that they actually got this right in such a short period of time after getting it wrong 9 previous attempts. And could that possibly explain all these adverse effects we're seeing around the country? Don't come at them with just a sentiment. They're coached about how to get around that. You'll look nuts. Have very specific
yes, that's exactly right.
And a very specific question.
Well, and so this is such an important point. So when someone asks me, Charlie, what do I do? I say, respectfully, how many town halls have you showed up to recently?
Mm-hmm.
They I sent my elected official an email. No. You know that these congressmen, especially, they do town halls all the time. And by the way, mm-hmm. no one shows up to them except like 3 groups of people. People that can't find their Social Security checks. People that, like literally, right? People that yes. are wondering if they can get a mailbox renamed or something.
Right.
And right. their employees and their staff. That's it. And yet, could you imagine
there's a fourth, Media Matters, but I hear you.
Well, yeah, but I mean, but then these town halls are so boring. By the way, Steve, this is one thing that I think we have not done as well that was done in the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party movement got the town hall thing perfectly. It was a big part. Remember that? They would show up at these, why are you voting for this spending?
Scared the poop out of Charles Grassley back in the day here in Iowa when they did that. Yes.
And so we did this for the school boards. Why have we not done this for the town halls? And that's a rhetorical question, right? But imagine if Joni Ernst had to confront a voter, why'd you send the GDP of North Dakota to Ukraine? What does success mm-hmm. look like? Latitude and longitude. What is not some sort of abstract answer. Why is our southern border wide open? Why'd I vote mm-hmm. for you exactly? It's how mm-hmm. you change the party.
I think the biggest thing is too many of our major conservative platforms have not engaged in this level of activism or encouragement of it and made this a passive or esoteric affair. And our people have sort of been conditioned in that way accordingly.
I completely agree. All right, Steve Dace, I wish we had more time. You're welcome anytime. Great fiery commentary. And what you are doing in Iowa is so important. Look them in the eyes. Hopefully record them when you're asking these questions, because they need you more than you need them, because mm-hmm. you're parked out in the state that they have to try to get relevancy for. Nikki Haley, all of them are going to be coming to you, man. Hey, can I go on your program? Okay. Answer some questions. Sure. We're respectful. Might not agree. I can't wait. It's awesome. In Arizona, they don't tend to want to come here as much, but that's okay. Steve Dace, wonderful American. Thanks so much.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.